Thus, the gatekeepers were condemned to fall into the material world. Therefore, let us consider how these two contaminated persons should be punished. The punishment should be apt, for thus benefit can eventually be bestowed upon them. Since they find duality in the existence of Vaikuntha life, they are contaminated and should be removed from this place to the material world, where the living entities have three kinds of enemies. End quote. 34. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to verse 34, describes the rationale behind the curse of the qualified Brahmin sages. Not being pacified by criticizing them, the Kumaras cursed them out of great anger. Therefore, let us think of something most beneficial for you two persons of low intelligence. Let us think of something that includes removal of seeing difference, obstructing Brahmanas, and insulting the Lord. End quote. Silent for a moment, they then spoke. You should go from Vaikuntha to those places where sinful enemies exist, as these three enemies, lust, anger, and greed. Gita 16:21. By seeing difference as offenders. Srila Prabhupada's purport to the same verse explains. In this verse it is clearly stated that the two doormen should be sent into the material world where criminals are allowed to reside. Since the basic principles of criminality are sense gratification, anger, and unnecessary lust, persons conducted by these three enemies of the living entity are never promoted to the Vaikuntha Loka. So what's gone wrong, then the idea is that should be included in the correction, right? So it's not just one's upset, so therefore there's some kind of retribution. But the idea is that retribution should have something to do with the mentality they have and the correction of it. Right? Because the whole idea is that people should be uplifted. Yeah. Right? So then the necessary thing is that has to be included. Does that make sense?
It's not about making them suffer.
No, it's not about suffering, it's about purifying. But it should be purified in a situation that matches their mentality, you know. Like you have Nalu Kuvara and Manigriva, right? So how they were behaving, then they were behaving like trees. But at the same time, they should somehow or another become rectified and become God conscious. Therefore, they come in contact with Krishna as trees, right? You know, so that's the whole point, is it should have some connection. It's not just, this is what we feel like. You know, it's like, that never purifies anyone, because we have to remember, prayaschitta doesn't actually purify. So it's a matter of how to become God conscious in a situation that matches the mentality. You understand? That's why then, it's say only these great sages, then they can curse. That's one of the qualifications of Muni, is he can curse. Right? That doesn't mean that he knows bad language or, you know, he can, you know, like that. It means that he can figure out what according to Shastra, what's wrong, and according what activity would generate the correction from that. Yes.
We say a curse is almost like a premonition more than like, I curse you, like a... It's like I seem to have read somewhere that they're actually seeing what will happen as a result of what they're doing.
That's just because you see according to the eyes of Shastra. Mm-hmm. Or they may be tree kala gya. Okay. But the point is you know from Shastra they do this, this will happen. Yeah. Right? So then you're working on that principle, how to correct that. Is that? Also interesting here is because then this lust, anger, and greed, but also sense gratification, anger, and unnecessary lust, right? So lust is there, anger is there, but sense gratification and greed go together. Because
Yes.
Generally we take it sense gratification standard, and then there's greed.
Yeah.
No, but the point is it's not ours, and we want it. So greed is more than what it would be required. So sense gratification that's not connected to the Lord is more than required. So it's already greed, you know? It's already. But then, when that's an extreme, then those who are greedy call that greed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, also, it depends on who you ask what greed is.
Yes.
Someone call it greed, another is just normal.
Yeah, it's just, we're just doing business. Yes. That's not greed. You know? Like that, yeah. Yes.
I have a question about karma. From a Krishna conscious perspective, to curse or to bless, it is the same effect?
Yes, it should be the same effect. But the point is blessing generally comes when there's proper behavior. And so then that is further encouraged. Cursing comes when the behavior is not proper and you're trying to bring them to the proper standard. So it's not just they did something wrong, so they get a punishment for that, because it's wrong. They did something wrong, that means they're not doing something right. So what the curse should therefore correct that not doing right and bring them to the right path. Does that make sense?
So getting a curse from Narada Muni is a blessing.
Yes, but one should avoid getting blessings from Narada Muni in that way.
Yes.
Right? There are also other ways of getting blessings. Yes.
Report.
Yeah. Okay. When the doormen of Vaikuntha Loka, who were certainly devotees of the Lord, found that they were going to be cursed by the Brahmanas, they at once became very much afraid and fell down at the feet of the Brahmanas in great anxiety. For a Brahmin's curse could not be counteracted by any kind of weapon. After being right, because the curse of the Brahmin, it's not that there's some counter to that. You know, we're always looking for the counter to something.
Yes.
If this is wrong, what can we do?
Yeah.
You know? Is that?
This curse, it involves some energy going. So where is this energy coming from?
From the tapasya of the sages.
So it means when they curse, then
their power goes less.
Okay.
So if they have immense power, then it goes a little less. If they don't have so much, then it doesn't work out so good.
So if people say cursed is that blood, so it's not like...
It doesn't necessarily have any power. It just means it's ill will.
Okay.
Right? So you'll have that affecting the subtle body. You know? I mean, in the... what do you call it? In the Western tradition, they call it the evil eye.
Yeah.
Like that. That's all. It just creates negative energy in the subtle body.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily, it's enough that it will actually have a real effect, like they say. Is that? Yeah. So that's the thing. So that's why it's only the sages it actually has an effect, or people that do tapasya. Like that. So if there's somebody who's very austere and everything like that, very regulated and that, and they get upset, then you have to worry more. You know? Well, if the local homeless beggar, you know, / drunkard curses you, it may not have a whole lot of effect. Yeah. Yeah.
It's because the sages are in line with Krishna.
Well, the sages are in line with scripture.
Yeah.
Now, whether so in that way, they're in line with Krishna. Now here, then they're Brahman realized, so then there's not going to be a problem there. There's not going to be any mundane element.
Yeah.
Right? But you might find other sages that they may be situated in karma and jnana.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, then they may have some. They'll be seeing according to Shastra, but it's not necessarily that there's the God-conscious element. Yeah. So they will just give a curse that's in line with the correction according to their level of understanding. You know, so in karma, it will bring you to piety. If it's jnana, it'll bring you to that platform. Yeah. But we see that with Narad Muni, it brings one to the platform of bhakti.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes?
Is it enough then that they just get upset and then it's the same as getting cursed?
Well, getting upset's not going to be auspicious because Krishna's not pleased, but cursed will have that extra effect. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, they've said something, so what they said, that will deal with you. Well, if you just upset them, then nothing that they've said will have an effect, but Krishna not being pleased, then he'll generate the effect. Does that make sense? Like we see here is that the doorkeepers should be punished, but since they've already been punished by the sages, then Krishna says that there's no need for him to punish. Because it's already been done. So either the effect of the Brahmin's curse, or they just get upset, and then the effect of Krishna's displeasure. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes?
It seems that there are no automatic upliftment in the initial curse, because they're just sent to a place where others have the same mentality as themselves. So,
well, that because you have means, in other words, there's a mentality that has to be rectified, so you put them in an environment where that mentality is the nature, right? And then from there, they'll be purified. Does that make sense? Because the point is someone needs to be in qualified association, one has to be qualified. This comes up sometimes. It's sometimes a question. Okay, you have very qualified people, so why not bring people who are unqualified into that close association? And that will benefit them, right? But the point is they don't know how to take advantage of that. That's why they have the character they do. So in other words, there's only certain situations where an unqualified person can take advantage of a qualified person's nature. Right? So you can't live with them, be with them, do everything with them, because that's where the difference lies. So it has to be something that they would have a tendency to pay attention and therefore take advantage. Does that make sense?
So the purification is that they're getting frustrated by seeing others acting in the same mentality as themselves and contemplating that they will change the behavior.
Can, but it's more that what is going to be the effect later. Right? In other words, they have to be placed into the situation where they belong. Then there must be, from there, then how to correct. But just like a criminal is put into prison. Then within prison, then there's the reformatory process. But you don't try to reform them out of prison because that won't have any effect on them. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just, one could say that's harsh, but that's just reality. You know what I'm saying? That's just, you know, like you have a bull in a china shop. Should the bull be in a china shop? It's a nice bull. The bull is Dharma personified. Why you're getting upset and pushing him out of your shop? You know, we're supposed to go Brahmana Hitayacha. We're supposed to worship the cows. Why are you pushing him out of your china shop? You understand? That's just sentimentality. It's not actually being reasonable that, yes, bull should be where? In an open field. You know, nice grass, nice sun. Like that. That's what it's supposed to be. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the point is what is the actual nature? So that's what you have to address. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because you can take anything out of context and it sounds great or bad. That's the whole thing. So. After being cursed by the sages, the doorman said, "It is quite apt that you have punished us for neglecting to respect sages like you. But we pray that due to your compassion at our repentance, The illusion of forgetting the Supreme Personality of Godhead will not come upon us as we go progressively downward. So they're not worried about the situation not being nice. What they're worried about is forgetting the Lord. Right? So that's the most important element for a devotee. Because situations are always changing. Right? So that you can't really guarantee that you'll have a fabulous situation. But if you're God conscious, then the situation doesn't matter. Right? That's it. 35, 36. Seeing the reaction of the doorkeepers upon being cursed, the Kumaras realized that they have cursed devotees of the Lord and felt remorseful. Right? Because before they thought they're imposters. They're just envious persons that somehow or another have a lording over tendency, therefore they're standing at the gate. But now they figure out they're devotees. Just like the doorkeepers now figure out these are great sages. Before they thought they were just kids.
Yeah.
Right? But the way they're speaking, you can understand these aren't kids.
Yeah.
Right? And then the way they're responding, then the Kumaras know they're not just envious persons, they're devotees. So now at this juncture, then we'll see it's where it's at, right?
Yeah.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the Kumaras thought, we have offended the Lord because we have cursed two devotees of the Lord. Oh, what shall we do? We have been conquered by anger. Our perpetual identity as peaceful saints has been destroyed in Vaikuntha. Right? You know, because they're proud of that in the material world. And that's also Krishna's arrangement, is that all these upadis are removed. Right? Repenting their action, they spoke to each of the doorkeepers individually. The doorman replied, that punishment should destroy the offense committed in Vaikuntha to the Lord and yourselves. Because by disrespecting you, by conducting ourselves against the desires of the Lord, and by showing anger, which should not be expressed in Vaikuntha, but we have shown remorse caused by your mercy. So they're saying they're remorseful, not because, yeah, we're such great remorseful people, you know, like that. But it's by the mercy of the sages now, by what they spoke, now they understood the real situation. Now they're able to understand what was wrong. So he says, yeah. By that speck of remorse, though we fall into the material world, let us not have the illusion of forgetting the Lord. So they're not saying that I'm an ocean of remorsefulness. They're just saying a speck. And that's come by their grace, by their instruction. Illusion in the form of obstacles to remember how to serve the Lord will certainly occur. Illusion in the form of obstacles to remembering how to serve the Lord would certainly occur. Though the curse should not be undone, therefore let us be bewildered, but let that bewilderment produce remembrance of the Lord. They prayed that at least they would not forget the Lord. Right? And we see is that their material absorption, they're totally absorbed in the Lord. Right? As an enemy, but totally absorbed in the Lord. So they never forgot the Lord.
Yeah.
Verse 37 to 45. The Lord arrives. Verses 37 to 45 describe the appearance of the Lord before the four Kumaras and the gatekeepers. The Kumaras smelled the fragrance of the tulsi leaves that a breeze carried from the Lord's lotus feet and gave up their Brahman realization, understanding that the realization of the personality of Godhead to be higher and sweeter. At that very moment, the Lord, who is called Padmanabha, because of the lotus grown from his navel, and who is the delight of the righteous, learned about the insult offered by his own service to the saints. Accompanied by his spouse, the goddess of fortune, he went to the spot on those very feet sought for by the recluses and great sages. 37. Jiva Goswami writes in Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheta 79. The Lord thought, I will pacify the anger caused by their being prevented from seeing my feet by showing them my feet. He thus went there on foot as a way of showing his haste. He was accompanied by the goddess Shri to secure their forgiveness by showering them with opulence. even though they were free from desire. So the Lord now is considering all the different things that Kumara is wanting to see, and then the nature of the doorkeepers, mm-hmm. right? So they're coming there quickly. So all these elements the Lord puts together perfectly in his pastime. Right? So then it comes out very wonderful. It matches the situation. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains the Lord's intention in his commentary to the same verse. The Lord, lover of brahmanas and affectionate to his devotees, then appeared there to prove that bhakti attracts the Lord. That bhakti shines and makes others shine. By making the kumaras and the doorkeepers bathe themselves in water drops from an ocean of inner humility, arising from committing offense to each other. By purifying them of their faults and making them realize the meaning of devotee and brahmana. Understanding that his devotees, Svanam, had offended the Kumaras, the Lord who appears in the hearts of the worthy, but who now appeared before their eyes, went to the seventh door, moving his feet, which should be sought immediately by the great sages. After Nirvikalpa Jnana, one should progress to Savikalpa Jnana, and then after realizing Brahman, one should attain realization of the form of the Lord in the form of his feet. So one might start with the Nirvikalpa Brahman because it's just a matter of you're trying to remove any attachment. So because the idea is that why am I doing something material? It's because of some mundane quality. Right? There's a quality that I want, and so I'm going to use that for myself. Right? So then the position of starting with Nirvikalpa Brahman becomes very natural because you see any kind of good qualities as something that you can take and use materially. But once comes to that platform where there's no attachment, then one should move to the Savikalpa Brahman. That Brahman is full of qualities. It's the source of everything. Therefore, that's why everything in the world has qualities. And those qualities are based on Brahman. Right? Having come to that point, then it should go to the point of the personal. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. So this is the position, is that they were jnanis, then they heard about the personal form, so now they're in between. Right? Then they come to the position of now seeing the Lord face to face and coming to Bhagavan realization. So,
yes.
Make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
So in our process we practice always remember, never forget, which is all-inclusive.
Yes, it's all-inclusive. So different technical things, we may be using this Nirvikalpa or Savikalpa Brahman aspect. But it's all in connection with Parabrahman, with the Lord, with Bhagavan. Because for us, Bhagavan includes the others. It's not that Bhagavan means those things aren't included. Just like we say, Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. So that would be that Savikalpa aspect, is that you're seeing the qualities of the Lord and seeing all these things. But it's not so much about the person, just that the position of the person appreciated. Like that. But at the same time, it's Krishna who's come as Paramatma, or Krishna who's expanding and is pervading everything. Like that. Does that make sense? But we may be using those aspects to bring the mind away from the mundane and bring it to Krishna. If you can just bring it directly to Krishna without those, then that's better. But if one can't, then, you know, naturally one uses. Okay. Yeah. I will inundate those jnanis in an astonishing ocean of great bliss, giving them an experience of my sweet feet, which they have not experienced before. They know that I possess the external energy, but they do not know my energy arising from my Swarup, Lakshmi. I will make them experience my bliss Shakti. Thus he appeared with Lakshmi. Right, so they've all they've been dealing with up to now basically is Sundani. right? And understanding the Samvit, that he's the Lord and controller, he is knowledge, and everything's going on, but they haven't experienced actually the bliss, right? Mm-hmm. Means there's an inherent bliss in Brahmananda, but that's just the neutral state of not being, having any problem. Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, there's some very, just nothing's going wrong. You know, there's somehow or another a moment where there's nothing wrong in your life. Right? In the way of at least you're not thinking about it or it's not affecting you. So that moment, on one level, you could call that happiness compared to when you're miserable. But it just means you're not unhappy. So you're just pleasant. That's the Brahman platform. It's just there isn't the problem in the material world, so the soul is just naturally happy in its neutral state. So it's not actually a positive happiness. It's a neutral happiness, that there's no mundane so-called happiness or distress.
What if you've just gotten a Bhagavad Bhava?
That's Ananda. You're talking about directly, you know. The,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It seems that Jiva by nature is feminine, and feminine can't stay on this platform for long.
No. No, that's why you have to take shelter either moving up or down.
Yes.
You have to either go into internal or into external. You can't stay in the middle.
It's unnatural. Actually.
It's unnatural. It's you could say it's a natural state, but it's very temporary. It means, in other words, all relationships start from there. Let's just say, just to give an example, let's say you have a friend, okay? Good friend. And you haven't seen them for some years, right? No contact, nothing. You bump into them. Where does the relationship start from?
From where it was met.
Where, exactly where it left off. Same flavor, same mood, everything. But if you have the feminine nature, if they have a good friend and they meet them after many years, it starts from zero. Not negative, not positive, zero. Then depending upon how those first few moments unfold, it may come immediately very quickly back to its original form, or it may go off into something else.
Hmm. Yes.
Did you reveal too much?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is that therefore the stage of bhava is that dynamic moving from neutral to prema. Right? While moksha is that neutral point, but you're not moving to prema, so you're again going to move back towards the mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it is a feminine nature, right? At least of us, right? But it's not the natural position. You don't remain in that. Well, the men can be in a neutral state and just kind of remain there. You know? Hey, how you say? A pleasant ignorance. Right? Just, you know. Like, how you say? You know, couch potatoing. Right? You know, it's just a... That's why the ladies can't relate to it, because they can't do that. Right? You can't just go sit on the couch and do nothing and just vegetate. You sit on the couch and either you get up and go do something else, or you pick up the phone and start talking to people. You know, but you're not going to just sit there and just, you know, broccoli. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so now what he's saying is he's brought Lakshmi to bring them to the stage of actually the Haladini Shakti. You know, give them an experience of actual Ananda. Because they've only experienced Brahmananda. But now positive, right? Because that's neutral happiness. Negative happiness is material. The spiritual is negative. And then the devotional is positive. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, he's brought Lakshmi. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, in Bhagavad Sandarbha Anucheta 79. The word svanam is used in the plural and not the dual in this verse. Although it refers only to the two doorkeepers, it may be that the Lord took it that all his personal associates were responsible for the offense of these two. Or it may be that the plural is used out of respect for the exalted gatekeepers. Right? Because plural will be more respectful, it's more formal than dual. Dual will always be more intimate, because that's the usage of the dual, is to show the nature of the closeness of the relationship. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. It should not be understood that the word svanam is used here to refer to the four kumaras, sages. These sages were not intimate devotees of the Lord, as the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha were, and therefore the word svanam, his own servants, cannot appropriately refer to them. So he's trying, because it's plural, one might think it's the four kumaras, right? Because he's talking to the doorkeepers, and using plural there would be, you would generally use dual case, right? But he's not, because then there's the consideration of himself, or out of, you know, just respect for the service of the doorkeepers. Next five verses, 38 to 42, describe the unprecedented sweetness of the Lord. The sages, headed by Shanaka Rishi, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was formerly visible only within their hearts in ecstatic trance, had now actually become visible to their eyes. Right? So they had been seeing the Lord in their hearts, so they had come to that next stage. So they were on the Brahman platform, now they've come to meditating upon the Lord within the heart. Right, but it's still not that Bhagavan platform. It's just that the form of the Supreme is beyond just the impersonal. So now there is a personal form, but it's not about the person. By meditating upon that person, then they're getting great ecstasy. Does that make sense? So beyond that is that it's about not about one's own ecstasy, it's about the Lord's happiness. Is that you understand the difference? Right? So therefore it's natural to go through these stages. So that's why one may say, well, what does this yoga stuff got to do with us? But we like the kirtan. What did we like about the kirtan? What we felt in the kirtan. We like the prasad. What did we like? What we felt taking the prasad. We like being the association devotees because of the effect that we felt. You understand? That's this platform. So that is that platform of yoga that they're talking about. It's just because it's bhakti, the effect comes without having to tie yourself up like a pretzel. Right? While in the Astanga system, then if you don't go through all that, you don't get to that platform. Bhakti is so much more powerful and effective that the stage that the yogis come to, the devotees are already at. But it has to come to, it's about pleasing the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The kirtan was so nice, I was so absorbed, I felt so happy, I felt like all the sins were going away, and just it was ecstatic, it was nice. It's connected to the Lord, it's perfect. But more is that the Lord's name, his name is not different, it's so sweet, it's so wonderful, that absorption, then, you understand? Therefore, Rupa Goswami, so when I hear the Krishna's name, I wish I had millions of years, when I, like that. Does that make sense? It's a different perspective. Yes?
Isn't this the problem with the yoga path, that it doesn't actually deal with this?
No, it doesn't. That's why bhakti is the only one that deals, but you can either use Astanga and then come to bhakti, or use bhakti that takes you through those levels anyway. Right? Because all eight levels, we have yama niyama, we do anyway. Asana, we sit or situate ourselves properly. Pranayam, we engage our endeavors in that in the Lord's service, in devotional service. We control the senses, we withdraw them. We try to focus on, you know, being conscious. We then focus on Krishna. Then we become completely absorbed.
But they're secondary for us.
They're secondary. While for the yogi, these are primary stages. Yes, but for us, they're secondary. But the same, yoga is yoga. It's just a matter of if it'll be more on karma or jnana or dhyana, Or in Buddha yoga, you can use them all, so you're not restricted by one only. So therefore, it's the most effective process. But because it has the power of bhakti, that's dynamic, because that's the nature of the soul. So the effects of these three kinds of yoga become very nicely applied, right? Whatever it needs to be applied. So that's why it doesn't look like we're following any particular path.
Yeah.
Right, and then we will think, oh, I'm doing something ordinary. Then we bump into people who have a very regimented kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so nice. You know, okay, so then wear what everybody else is wearing. No, I want to do whatever I want. Okay, then do whatever you want. But this is so nice. They're falling, you understand? That's the problem. The same people that have a problem with authority are the same ones that get attracted by people who are using a more external form.
Yes. That's funny.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that despite all our good intentions, it's either we'll deal with the contradictory elements on the spiritual platform, or we'll be forced to follow them on the material platform. Right? You know, the Achintya Shakti will act.
That's
funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
How is it possible that the Kumaras, they were not as powerful as the gatekeepers of
They were not as powerful. Why do you use the term power?
Because here is kind of a first being. It's like, what can I say? Because they want to enter a place, they don't want to let them in. So it's a kind of war.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's why I'm using the actual word.
Okay, but then go ahead.
So my question is, if the Kumaras were less powerful, how could they, that all of their curse have any effect on them?
Because it's accepted. It's accepted. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he's cursed by that son of a Brahmana. He could have counteracted it, but he doesn't. Because he sees, yes, I've done wrong. You know, because the tendency is the devotees don't use the mystic systems. It says that these great devotees, they have all the eight mystic cities, but you never see them use them. Right? It just doesn't happen, because the point is they want to see how the pastime unfolds, because Krishna's pastimes are human. Right? Therefore, the human means no mystic powers. So it just unfolds how it does. Does that make sense? If you're working on a more divine level of pastimes, then they may be using the mystic powers. Does that make sense? But otherwise, it's just standard that we see these great personalities don't use it. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Is it only the acceptance of the devotee being cursed, or is it also Krishna's acceptance of it?
Well, in this case, it's Krishna's acceptance of it. But naturally, if anything works, that's because Krishna is sanctioning it. But it's not that's his desire. In this case, it's personal, so it's also his desire, because then there'll be the pastime of fighting. But in the day-to-day, you know, how you say?
Dealings.
Yeah, no, it's just that I got stuck with the phrase. As the world turns, yes. Okay. Is that so? As that unfolds, then that's just the action reaction based on our desires, our karma. So it's just a matter of, we desire something, if we have the karma to get it, then Krishna sanctions it. If we don't have the karma to get it, it's not sanctioned. Does that make sense? It's just like you go into a shop, you have the money, you buy what you like. You don't have the money, you can't. Does that make sense? So therefore, because we're working on I am the doer, therefore I did the work, I get the result, then you did the proper work, you get the result. You didn't do the work, you don't get the result. You know, it's just judicial, that's all.
Here it's different on this platform.
On here, it's because it's the Lord's pastime. Otherwise, how do you get Jaya and Vijaya to go to the material world and become demons so that the Lord can come and fight with them? Does that make sense? Because who can fight with the Lord except the devotee? Right, the demons aren't, means the biggest demons in history are Jaya and Vijaya's, you know, incarnations. But you don't get bigger demons than that in any of these eight that they came as. So that means as a materialist, you can only become so bad. You don't have the piety to have the focus to become that bad. Is that my thing? Yeah. Okay, the Lord who is visible, formerly visible only within their hearts in a static trance, had now actually become visible to their eyes. Achakshataksha Vishayam. As he came forward, accompanied by his own associates, bearing all paraphernalia, such as an umbrella and a chamara fan, the white bunches of hair moved very gently, like two swans. And due to their favorable breeze, the pearls garlanding the umbrella also moved, like drops of nectar falling from the white moon, or ice melting due to a gust of wind. So it's just a very beautiful situation is there. That the Lord comes, and so then the Kumaras are going to be very attractive. And the doorkeepers, because they're devotees of the Lord, they're going to be very pleased. Right? So it's something very, very nice. And it's the Lord with his associates, so it's all about the relationships and everything. Right? Yeah. And as a side point, then that means when you're using a chamara, it should create a breeze. If you're just sitting there and doing all kinds of fancy things, that's not what a chamara is for. You know, it's like you're cooking and you're taking the spoon for stirring and, you know, doing a whole thing that you don't want. You know, it's what's the point? Well, it looks great, you know.
The food is burning.
Yeah, but, you know, it's going good.
Looks good.
Yeah. So it says it has a point. So it's supposed to create a breeze. Yeah. A gentle breeze, very gently, like two swans, but there should be a breeze. Is that?
You also see the other one.
Yeah. No, that's there also. That's not swans, you know. So, yeah.
So we see in this pastimes that Brahman and Paramatma realization, it's partially by the effort of a practitioner, but then Bhagavan, before it reveals himself, it can be gained.
No. Because what you see is that the Brahman and Paramatma levels are, you know, according to our endeavor, the Lord then reciprocates with that. So therefore, our endeavor makes a great difference.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Bhagavan, it's simply the Lord's mercy. So there has to be that pure desire. And so it's not that you've made effort by that pure desire, and the effort itself is what is getting the result. It's that the Lord is pleased that there's a consistency in that effort, in that desire. And so therefore the results come. Does that make sense? Of course, ultimately it's all the Lord, but there is a difference in that the Bhagavan realization is simply by his personal mercy. But the others, if you follow the laws, you get the results from that. Right? If I'm austere, I get power from that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. So then, you know, because we even see in the material world, a person's in a very difficult situation, you know, and you meet them after that situation, there's a greater maturity and focus than there was before. You know. So it does have an effect. But that's just because the law has been followed. But then for the mercy of the Lord, then that it's simply based on devotion. Is that?
Just a doubt that the Kumaras, they didn't perform any devotional service as such, and still they got a darshan of...
No, but they went to Vaikuntha to see the Lord.
Well, that was the endeavor.
Yes, and they became upset when it was thwarted and they couldn't get in. So that desire was there.
Hmm.
And they've been meditating upon the Lord within the heart and all. But you know, but hasn't been here. But here they're trying to see the Lord as a person. That's why they went to Vaikuntha. So it's not that it has to be a great amount. It just has to be what pleases the Lord. So it could be one has done something for a long time, or it could be just a moment. But it's the quality of it. That the gopis surrender in a moment is far greater than, you know, others' possible lifetimes of practice, just because it becomes a little bit more about the practice and less about the surrender.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, we'll take, get up, chant my rounds, do this, do that. We'll make a whole, you know, scheme of, you know, fabulous sadhana from waking up to, you know, breakfast, you know, like that. You know, generally we don't worry about it beyond that, but at least after breakfast, right? So then, you know, so, and, but at the same time, is it's not necessarily, though it's ultimately to please Krishna, right? So, because it's devotional service, but it's not necessarily in our focus that we're actually thinking about how it pleases Krishna. We're just thinking it's good sadhana, we'll become purified, we'll become advanced, we'll get, you know, knowledge and understanding. Does that make sense? Which is connected to Krishna, so it's bona fide. But it's not as developed as that one's going to the temple for Mangalarti to see the Lord, and that he wants to see the devotees. You know, we're chanting because of that association with the Lord, or trying to get the actual blessings of Tulsi Devi, just, you know, rather than who can get into line first and water first, you know. Or, you know, is that like, who sits where in the temple when we're chanting? You know, this is my pillar. You know, this is my rug, or that's my corner, or, you know. But all those things are fine, because as an individual, then there's something that you appreciate. That's why you've chosen the spot. So it's not that it's a problem with devotional service. But in the process, we may get distracted by that. That's why then now and again, Krishna, for fun, puts someone in that spot. Is that? Yeah. Yes.
What if we're not playing because it's good sadhana, but because we feel joy being with Krishna, serving Krishna?
Then that's nice, that's good. That's good. It's not a problem. That's basically what you want, so. No? Yeah, so then don't worry about it. If that's your problem, don't worry about it.
So Bhagavan is...
Better everybody has this problem.
Bhagavan is very subtle.
Bhagavan is very subtle because it's personal. The other ones, it's about the form and action.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's because everything will come in these levels. Right? It means that you have the sambandha. Right? Or you have the sandini, the existence, and you have the sambit, which is the knowledge and the... activity, because
yes.
The feminine nature means there's a form in the act.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So therefore, then that will be the why? Because then, from form and action, you get results.
Right? And
if no form, no action, no results.
Bhagavan, you already have the result. Is that? Can we say like that?
No, it just means that those things are constantly going on, but it's only for the focus is on pleasing the Lord. What happens here is we focus on the secondary attributes.
Yes.
Right? The form is the most important, the activity is the most important.
Yes.
Or getting a result, you know, the physical result is the importance, rather than the experiential of that. And that being then for Krishna's pleasure.
Yes.
So, okay.
Right.
Let's start. Yeah.
We're seeing that Paul Kumara is performing the process of Tata Sevana, both by traversing through the Lord's abode, which is one definition of Parikrama, and desiring to see the Lord's lotus feet also. Tata Sevana.
Yes, but whether they're conscious of that traversal aspect is another thing. But definitely wanting to see the Lord's lotus feet, that's there. That's there. Okay. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to verse 38, explains. In this verse, we find the word achaksha taksha vishayam. The Supreme Lord cannot be seen by ordinary eyes, but he now became visible to the eyesight of the Kumaras. Another significant word is samadhi bhagyam. Meditators who are very fortunate can see the Vishnu form of the Lord within their hearts by following the yogic process. But to see him face to face is a different matter. This is only possible for pure devotees. The Kumaras, therefore, upon seeing the Lord coming forward with his associates, who were holding an umbrella and a chamra fan, were struck with wonder that they were seeing the Lord face to face, because they've only seen him in meditation up to now. So then their devotion has now given its results. Commenting on the same verse, Srila Sridhar Swami explains the meaning of the word swasamadhi bhagyam as follows. He, Vishnu, is what they had previously seen in the samadhi as Brahman, and he as Bhagavan had now become the object of their vision. Right, so even though they're seeing the person, they're still seeing that this is the form of the Supreme Brahman. So they weren't, it's not about, does that make sense? Because it's just, Brahman is a position. Right, all pervading, you know, like that. That's a position, right? All knowing is Paramatma, but then, as a person, how he interacts, his mood, his culture, what he likes, dislikes, that's Bhagavan. That's a whole different aspect, right? Huh. Some Russian here. Does that mean Jiva Goswami is in Russian, or does this mean that the commentator? No, it looks like Russian. It's not Russian. Okay. The Russians say it's not Russian.
Russian.
Huh?
Russian.
Russian. Oh, it's Bulgarian. Okay. No? So then we're just going to have to accept that it's just a typo. Okay. Okay. Yes?
I wonder, did I understand correctly that
Paramatma is not a person? No, is a person, but you're only seeing his position. You're not seeing, just like when you say, who heads the country? Okay, prime minister. So it's a position, but are you worried about like what the prime minister likes to do or who he likes to associate with, on what platform, what he eats, what he? Does that matter to you? No. So that's the meaning of Paramatma. It's just the prime minister himself. Bhagavan means then you have the prime minister, his mood, his family, what he does, his relationships. Do you understand? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's still basically within the impersonal. Because it's localized, that it's just down to just the Lord and in that situation. So it's about the Lord and the situation rather than the Lord and what situations he likes to be in. Does that make sense? Yeah, means it's not the Paramatma is not a person, but when you're dealing with them as Paramatma, you're not worried about the personal aspect. You're worried about the positional aspect, right? You know, he's the Lord. He's all pervading. He's all knowing. He's the judge. He's the seer. He's the all these things. You know, in other words, most points that people make about God are all on the Brahman and Paramatma level. It's very rare they get to the Bhagavan level. If they do, they don't notice it. Just like, you know, Allah will be the primary name, but Ramana will not be. Though it should be the other way around. Does that make sense? You know, it's just that they choose names that show his greatness and his power, as opposed to the personal.
So when we talk about Paramatma in the heart, is that the Krishna name, or is it?
It depends on how you're relating to him, because Krishna responds to you as you surrender to him. So if it's just, you know, he's sitting there, so he sees what you're doing, so maybe you should adjust what you're doing, then it's Paramatma. It's a person, but the reciprocation is Paramatma. You know, when you're actually trying to please him, then that will take on the Bhagavan aspect. Does that make sense? Oh, I see. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheda 79, that text 38 refutes the impersonalist idea that the Lord is formless. The sages now saw the Lord directly before them. Formerly, he had only been visible in their hearts. This text affirms that it is possible to directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead and refutes the following ideas. 1. The Lord's form is the superfluous appearance imposed on the formless Brahman. 2. The goodness which the Lord's form is composed is mixed with other modes and is material. 3. The Lord's form is a transformation of the material mode of goodness. And 4. The Lord's form is primarily filled with the mode of goodness. So all these are removed by this. Yes. Brahma continues. Because they're desperately trying to establish that anything that has qualities or form, right, is material. Because they really want to control and enjoy it, and they can't. So out of frustration, they're trying to give that up. Not because it's necessarily a higher level of realization. It's just the natural response to not being able to enjoy the senses. Therefore, when we say the purusharthas, we say dharma, which generates artha, from artha there's kama, and from kama, not being frustrated, then there's a desire for moksha. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's how it works. So it's not that they're necessarily seeing it as a higher position, though it is. But it's about just being frustrated. So they have to look at it that there is nothing, no form, no quality, anything is good. Because if it is, then immediately they want it for sense gratification. It's only when they're a more mature form that they're actually looking for the absolute truth. And when an impersonalist comes in contact with bhakti, then they see the higher nature. Right? They see the transcendental nature of it and are able to move forward like the four Kumaras. Yeah? So we see that like Prakashananda, Saraswati, Sarvabhauma, Bhattacharya, they're actually seeking the absolute truth. But they've only come to the position of Brahman realization. That's all they know. But they want to know the truth. But for most of them, they just want to be God. It's not about knowing the truth. Right? Because God's actually the supreme controller and enjoyer, and that's the position they want. So that's why they fight so much with the principle of the personal. Not that it doesn't make sense to them. They don't want it to make sense. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's not a doubt. Like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, it's a doubt. Because according to the logic he's been trained in, it doesn't make sense. But when you point it out logically, then fine. But with these others, it's a misgiving. They don't want it to be true. So even though you give very nice logical arguments, they won't accept because they actually don't want it to be true. Because if that's the case, then I'm, again, you know, controlled and not the supreme. Right? So if I can't control everything and enjoy everything as a karmi, then I'll try to control and enjoy everything as a jnani by renouncing it all. Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? It's like this. I have something and I'm upset, I don't deal with it. But that's the taste, that it's mine and I'm not dealing with it.
Yes.
You understand? But if you didn't have it, where's that taste? So if you didn't consider the material world's mine, then how is there a taste in renouncing it? Because it's not yours in the first place. That's why it's a bogus philosophy. It's not yours to renounce. It never was in the first place. It's mine and I'm renouncing it all. And then that gives a taste. Understand? So if there's misgiving, they don't want to give up that taste. If there's an actual search for knowledge, then they'll see is that step that they've made is a step forward, but there's more steps. Then, like the Kumaras, then they, now they see the Lord in front of them. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Brahma continues, the Lord is a reservoir of all pleasure. His auspicious presence is meant for everyone's benediction, and his affectionate smiling and glancing touch the core of the heart. Because it's about personal dealing, so this affectionate smiling and glancing, that's all part of the interaction. The Lord's beautiful bodily color is blackish, and his broad chest is the resting place of the goddess of fortune, who glorifies the entire spiritual world. And so the whole spiritual world becomes glorious by the presence of Lakshmiji. And she's resting on the Lord's chest. So how much more auspicious is the Lord's chest? The summit of all heavenly planets. Okay, the spiritual world. Thus it appeared that the Lord was personally spreading the beauty and good fortune of the spiritual world. Right? So it's not just the world itself is doing it, but he himself, as the personification, is spreading that glory. 39. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the reaction of Jaya and Vijaya upon seeing the Lord's beauty. Jaya and Vijaya wept in lamentation. Since we will fall down, burned by the fire of the Brahmana's curse, we will no longer see the Lord's sweetness. End quote. The Lord responded to them. He touched the hearts of all present by the skill of his affectionate glance. How affectionate he is to all, to his devotees. In this way, he attracted their mind. With Lakshmi in the form of a golden line situated on his left upper chest, he was the abode of Vaikuntha, which was the crest jewel among all planets, starting with Swarga and ending with Satyaloka. Seeing this, everyone became most fortunate. This will also be explained later. The sweetness of his mercy and form were realized and understood by the mind and eye. So they're going to lose that seeing of the Lord, that he's so affectionate that he's showing himself. Right? So they're able to appreciate that aspect. Yeah, so then the crest jewel of all planets, starting Swarga and ending with Satyaloka, so it's kind of like Patal and Vital don't really count in the equation. You know? Right? He was adorned with a girdle that shone brightly on the yellow cloth covering his large hips. And he wore a garland of fresh flowers, which was distinguished by humming bees. His lovely wrists were graced with bracelets, and he rested one of his hands on the shoulder of Garuda, his carrier, and twirled a lotus with another hand. His countenance was distinguished by cheeks that enhanced the beauty of his alligator-shaped pendants, which outshone lightning. And so his cheeks were more attractive and brilliant than were the earrings. So the earrings, the cheeks actually make the earrings look better. You know, so then it's a nice combination.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
His nose was prominent, and his head was covered with a gem-studded crown. A charming necklace hung between his stout arms. And his neck was adorned, like so the necklace then shows the arms. Right? And his neck was adorned with the gem known by the name Kastuba. As the Kumaras joyfully bowed their heads, the breeze that carried the aroma of tulsi leaves from the toes of the Lord's lotus feet entered their nostrils, causing a spiritual transformation in their body and mind, even though they had been fully attached to the impersonal Brahman understanding. Because if you're on the transcendental platform, there's nothing material, no matter how wonderful the situation or how bad, that will cause a transformation. Because one is situated in Brahman, everything being Brahman, therefore, what's the? If you vary the situation, why will it create any difference in your appreciation of it? Because it's exactly the same to you. It's all Brahman. Right? It has variety, but it's Brahman. Right? So now they're dealing with the Supreme Brahman, and it's generating transformation. Right? So this has never happened before. So they know that they are not materially situated, so it can't be anything material. So this must be the spiritual aspect that Brahma was talking about before. He was talking about the personal form of the Lord. So there must be, that must be transcendental.
Yes. The same experience Shukadeva Goswami had when he heard
Bhagavatam, yes, like that. So, because for him, whether he's inside the womb or outside, it's going to be the same. It's all Brahman. But hearing this, now he sees that there's something. Yes. So that's the whole point, is the taste is greater. Because we're talking about just the position of liberation being an ocean compared to a drop. But then that ocean of Brahman realization is then not even compared to a full drop. You know, to an unlimited ocean. So a drop to an ocean, but then a portion of a drop to an unlimited ocean. So then there's nothing to cloud the vision, so they can clearly see that. So then... The Lord's beautiful face appeared to them like the inside of a blue lotus. And the Lord's smile appeared to be blossoming jasmine flower. Upon seeing the face of the Lord, the sages were fully satisfied. And when they wanted to see him further, they looked upon the nails of his lotus feet, which resembled rubies. Thus they viewed the Lord's transcendental body again and again. And so they finally achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. Because before that, they were only meditating on Paramatma. With the Brahman understanding. But now their meditation now has switched to Bhagavan. Because it wasn't before, it's just they're meditating because that's what you do. So it's about the focus, the meditation. It will give a feeling, but that feeling of the Brahman realization. But now it's about the body of the Lord, and that is giving them more and more satisfaction. They want to again and again look. So that's new to them. Yeah. 40-44. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur expresses the details of how the Kumara's minds changed and the feelings they experienced. When the sweetness of the Lord's body produced in them a level of astonishment much higher than the bliss of Brahman, it penetrated within them. What can be said? The wind touching something related to a limb of the Lord made them fall from their position of Brahman and produce great agitation in them. The wind carrying the aroma of Tulsi combined with the red and white of the Lord's toenails, like filaments on the lotus of his feet, entered the sage's mind to take control of the place. Quote, but without permission, is it not improper to enter their minds, just as it would be improper for the Kumaras and others to enter into someone else's inner chambers? End quote. But the nostrils are the natural holes for the air. The air entered their nostrils. So it's not you need permission, because air, that's just what it does. It enters nostrils. Right? And generally we're not complaining about it. You know, depends where we are. Calcutta, maybe. Yeah.
That's not the air we're complaining about.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Whose permission does the air need? What happened when the air entered? Their minds and bodies became agitated. First, the mind became very strongly agitated by the changes arising from bliss. Then the body became agitated with tears, hairs standing on end, and perspiration. A person desiring to enter another's country first kills the leader, plunders the place, and disturbs the place. Then he conquers it with his troops. If they were so fixed in the bliss of Brahman, why should the bliss of realizing Bhagavan make them identify with the Lord? Okay. So then, yes. Even though they had been practicing contact with the Brahman, the bliss of Bhagavan was more powerful because of its sweetness. The scent of Tulsi purified the pranas, and then the senses, since the senses are department dependent on the pranas. First, the eyes received. So, like there's smell, so just the life air has become purified, then the senses become purified. Yes. Because the senses are dependent on the life air. Everything moves because of the life airs.
This is the higher taste.
Yes. But it also is just that they're functioning that. Therefore, when one's chanting and that, the life airs become purified, therefore the senses become purified.
Yes.
First, the eyes receive the qualification for the sweetness of the Lord's form. Because of the unlimited variety of sweetness within each limb of the Lord, they desire to simultaneously experience all the sweetness, and thus disturbance spread throughout their bodies. Right? Because when you're dealing on the transcendental platform, the senses can all be functioning at once. Here we only deal with one sense at a time. But there, we can deal with all of them will function at once. That's why it becomes so overwhelming. Right? In this way, they lost control because of the friction created by the bliss, right, between all the different senses. Right? Yes. This is described in this verse. They certainly saw the Lord's face like the inner part of a blue lotus bud, without the rough outer covering, because the outside is more rough. The inner are very fine, soft, and the color will be also brighter, because outside gets the sun and everything. You know, it's weathered, while the inside is not. And relished its sweetness. His lips were even more beautiful. Upon his lips was a smile, which was most beautiful. They had been previously blessed by Brahma, their father and their brother Narada, for achieving bhakti. Right, so now that's come to fruition. Now the fruits of that blessing were manifesting. Sridhar Swami says that because they were unable to experience the beauty of all of the Lord's limbs simultaneously, they then began to meditate on those limbs. Nida Dhyu, Labashisha, and Pitranu Varnita, Raha, verse 46, indicate that the Lord's mercy follows after the mercy of the devotees, and by the mercy of the Lord one achieves bhakti. So the devotees are blessed, therefore the Lord's blessing follows that. Because statements are made generally because of predominance of one factor, one can say that bhakti arises by the mercy of the Lord, though actually the devotees first give mercy. Is that because we don't like to necessarily combine it? We want to say it's this or it's that. Right? So, but the actual point is because the Lord desires the devotees are preaching, because the devotees give blessings, then the Lord's blessing follows that. Thus, one can say that by the mercy of the Lord, the Kumaras achieve bhakti and experience the sweetness of the Lord. The Kumaras who were accomplished yogis and gurus of all impersonalists had now achieved the full perfection of the practice by beholding the Lord's exquisite form. Quote, "This is the form of the Lord which is meditated upon by the followers of the yoga process, and it is pleasing to the yogis in meditation. It is not imaginary, but factual, as proved by great yogis. The Lord is full in eight kinds of achievement, but for others these achievements are not possible in full perfection." 45. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, Persons desire liberation because of lack of pure bhakti, do not desire to experience the sweetness of the Lord. But without meditation on the Lord, they cannot achieve even liberation. The form of Narayana, approved by many authorities, is suitable for meditation, with its qualities by practitioners of Astanga Yoga who seek liberation. He shows a human form. There are many other forms of the Lord, such as Mohini, who are all accepted as Bhagavan. The Lord is endowed with his own 8 perfections: sounds, touch, taste, form, smell, mercy, action, and power. Arising from his sarup, which are natural or eternal, experienced through bhakti by his devotees. This means the devotees experience 7 items: his sweet voice, sound, his softness, touch, his beauty, form, his sweetness, taste, his fragrance, smell, his affection, mercy, his pastimes, action, by the 6 senses in the form of prema. The 8th item, power, Aishwarya, consisting of the 6 qualities which divine Bhagavan, is experienced by the devotees, the aspirants for liberation, and those liberated according to their capabilities. Some say the 8 cities refers to the 8 mystic powers, such as anima.
Right. So you could look at it that way, but more important for the devotees are these 8. Right? Yeah. Because this is the personal interaction. Yeah. The others are just basically powers.
Yeah.
Right? Because it already mentions powers. So then they'll be included there. Yes. Verses 46 to 50.
Right. So before they're meditating on the Lord, but they're not interested in the sweetness. But now they have seen the Lord, so now that sweetness has become included in their meditation. So now when they're thinking of the Lord, it's done through that sweetness. And they're seeing, you know, all the aspects of the Lord, they're trying to see at once. Because each aspect is so nice, you want to see it all at once. Just like you're eating the food, and each preparation is nice, you want to eat all the preparations at once. You know, so you can't do that on the material platform, right?
You can try.
Huh? Yeah, you could. Yes.
So they experience bhava at that stage?
Yes, that would be that. You know, so how much that, you know, that move forward into prema, that is not necessarily so far revealed. But yes, that will be bhava. Because before this, up to now, they've been experienced, Brahmananda. But now they're actually on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Mm-hmm. So then that's generating actual aesthetic symptoms. Mm-hmm. Right? So you see is that the sattvika bhavas and the anubhavas and that are manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Verses 46 to 50. The 4 Kumaras offer prayers to Lord Narayana. The 4 Kumaras pray to the eternal form of the Lord. They declare that they do not mind being born in any condition as long as they can hear and chant the Lord's glories. Right? So it's again the same position. Now they've seen what they've done wrong, and they pray that whatever it is, they can always hear and chant the Lord's glories. Just like the doorkeepers are always wanting to never forget the Lord. Right? Our dear Lord, you are not manifested to rascals, even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. But as far as we are concerned, we see you face to face, although you are unlimited. So this thing, he's unlimited, but we're seeing face to face. The statements we have heard about you from our father, Brahma, through the ears have now been actually realized by your kind appearance. Because they've heard him, they have the knowledge, the gyan, but now it becomes vigyan. Because right? That's where the actual taste is. Means there can be a taste in jnana, but that's not the particular knowledge. That's just jnana itself, right? But vigyan, then that the mind actually gets a taste because then it's connected with your life,
yes.
Right? Because there's a value. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like for an intellectual, it's not specifically an area of knowledge. It's just knowledge itself. They may have their favorite areas, but any area that will generate that happiness of speculation, they're happy. Right? But it's not about here, then it's about the Lord himself. So that realization then brings out that personal interaction.
Yeah.
46. Srila Prabhupada describes the fructification of the Kumbhara's sincerity in searching for the Lord. Here the four sages, Sanat Kumar, Sanatana, Sanandana, Sanaka, are described as actually sincere devotees. Although they had heard from their father Brahma about the personal feature of the Lord, only impersonal feature, Brahman, was revealed to them. But because they were sincerely searching for the Lord, they finally saw his personal feature directly, which corresponded with the description given by their father. Thus they became fully satisfied. Here they expressed their gratitude because although they were foolish impersonalists in the beginning, by the grace of the Lord they could now have the good fortune to see his personal feature. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment on the same verse. What unlimited great mercy! We have experienced the bliss of directly meeting the Lord by his mercy. We are so fortunate. O unlimited Lord, ocean of unlimited powers and sweetness. Though situated in the heart, you are not visible to the sinful, but you have appeared to us today in front of our eyes, and also previously. When did I appear previously? You do not remember. When your secret nature was described by Brahma, it entered our intelligence through the ears. In this way, we have previously attained you. Brahma said, O my sons, realizers of Brahman, meeting him directly is millions of times more blissful than realizing Brahman. Let that be. Bhagavan, dark like a blue lotus, with four strong arms, decorated with bracelets, armbands, and earrings, with moon-like face, resting, residing in Vaikuntha, is available by bhakti. End quote. When we heard the blessings of mercy given by our father, a great devotee of the Lord, the fruits of that blessings would definitely appear in the future. We know that this meeting today with you arises from the incomparable mercy of your devotee. O Lord, you do not independently give mercy to us. You are dependent on your devotees. The greatness of the mercy of your devotees cannot be described. So that's the whole, that's where the element of respecting the devotees comes from. It's because the Lord's mercy doesn't flow on its own. It always follows the devotee's mercy.
Yes.
So who's giving the mercy? Right? But of devotees, then which class?
The Madhyas.
The Madhyas. Because they're preaching. Yeah. The neophytes may or may not, but it's not necessarily a regular feature. Right, it's not the when you're saying the predominant features of a neophyte, you know, giving mercy to others isn't the one that springs to mind first, right? And for the Uttamadhikaris, they already see everyone as devotees. So where will be the giving of mercy?
Yes.
Does that make sense? So it's the preachers, the Madhyamas, they're giving the mercy.
Yes.
So now, if you have a problem with them, then how is the Lord's mercy going to flow to you? It flows to them. Yeah, so that's why it's the greatest of all the fences. Because the other fences, they can be worked on. But this one is a problem.
Yes.
Is that
something? That's a good point.
Yeah. That's why this one's the big elephant.
Yes.
Well, the other ones are a problem.
Yeah.
You know, they will stop the development. But this one will destroy. The other ones will stop development. This will destroy development.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing. Because for the Lord, it's about the relationship with the devotees. So naturally, if the devotees give you mercy, then his mercy follows that.
Yes.
So that's what he's looking for, is you've pleased the devotees, they've given mercy.
Yes.
Yes.
So when Brahma... he was presenting some aspect about spiritual life for Kumara, and it seems that he did not mention. Did he express Brahma Samhita
to them?
To them,
and that we're not sure. It means all we know is they give a synopsis here that he explained that there's the personal form and how wonderful it is. But they, up to this point, weren't interested in... They were meditating on the form, but not in connection with the sweetness.
Yes.
So it's just the position You know, as you're saying, it's Paramatma. So they were gaining from that impersonal realization, right? They weren't gaining personal. So now, once seeing the Lord, now they're again meditating on that same form, but now directly, and appreciating the sweetness. So now they move forward to Bhagavan. Right? Because you see, within this, Paramatma is a neutral state. You can either from there move forward into Bhagavan or backwards into Brahman. Right?
Yes.
Just like the Brahman platform. You can move forward into bhakti or back into material. Is that what you're saying? So it's not something that remains. Is that what you're saying? The yogis use the meditation for a purpose. To get their yoga siddhis, to get impersonal realization, or to get bhakti. So it doesn't remain as a process. You know what I'm saying?
So Maharaj, this indicates that there is a need of a personal realization. Even if he has heard from Narada and,
yes.
Narada and Brahma, but
yes.
They need a personal...
Yes. So hearing that Shravana, then you contemplate and practice that, apply it.
Yes.
Then by regularly doing that, that will give nididhyasana, realization.
Yes. Okay.
So now that nididhyasana has come to pass. Yes. So Brahma has explained to them, they've been practicing that, but on the impersonal platform, or the Brahman platform, right? But now, from doing that, now they've gotten the realization, by the Lord's mercy, of the personal. Okay. We know that you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, who manifests His transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness. This transcendental eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy, through unflinching devotional service, by great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. 47. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport to verse 47 describes the Kumara's good fortune. Until this time we have been jnanis, but now we have become devotees. This is such good fortune. That is expressed in this verse. We now know that you are that person described by Brahma by your mercy. We have realized you since we have become Vaishnavas. We realized previously that we were Atma, but now we realize you as the Supreme Atma, as stated, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the basis of Brahman, Atma, Bhagavad Gita 14:27. You produce prema for the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Can jnanis realize this form of the Lord without bhakti? Sages like us, the Kumaras, can know your supreme form only by fixed bhakti yoga. How can one know the characteristics of bhakti yoga? It can be understood by remorse caused after we cursed your two devotees. Sages fixed in impersonal Brahman without bhakti do not repent, because it's all Brahman, so it doesn't matter what happens. Does that make sense? So therefore the remorse that came, that's then what generated. So that was applied in bhakti, and because of that application of bhakti, then they got the darshan of the Lord.
Yes.
Srila Prabhupada explores the relationship between mercy and qualification in his purport to verse 47. In one sense, absolute transcendental variegatedness is meant only for the devotees, not for others, because this distinct feature of transcendental variegatedness can be understood only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord and not by mental speculation or the ascending process. And so no other process but bhakti, which then generates the Lord's mercy, can give you realization. The other process is you're working with material matter, using material matter. So how are you going to understand transcendence? Right? It is said that one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead when one is even slightly favored by Him. Otherwise, without His mercy, a man can speculate for thousands of years and not understand what is actually the absolute truth. So a slight, right, even slightly favored, then one starts to understand. So devotees, in general, they understand to some degree. So that means they have the mercy of the Lord to understand that.
Yes.
And then just as one practices, one gains more mercy, one gains more understanding.
Yes.
This mercy can be perceived by the devotee when he is completely free from contamination. It is stated, therefore, that only when all contamination is rooted out and the devotee is completely detached from material attractions can one receive this mercy of the Lord. Right? So this partial one gives. So but what does that mean? Is that because here it's saying when it's completely rooted out. So those moments where one is actually acting in pure devotion, one gets that realization. But then the next moment, then we're worried about something else, and then that realization becomes clouded. But it has been there. It has an effect.
And that generates more scope for further.
Yeah, and then again in the situations, that's why we're always putting ourselves in favorable situations. Right, we see the doorkeepers and the four Kumaras aren't talking about favorable situations. They're just talking about hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord. That's all they're worried about.
Yes.
But they're not. But for us, the situation, you know, does have an effect as we identify with the external energy. So that's why we constantly do it. And then by those situations, then we happen to have that proper attitude, that proper surrender. And then that gives rise to the Lord's mercy. And so then, the more that's there, the more that comes, right? If you do, that's the results of action. You do something, then the desire to do it again arises. So if it's good, then the desire to do that good again will come up. If you do bad, the desire to do the bad will again come up. So that's the problem. The good and the bad, then they're always then there's devotional service,
which is not the ugly.
Yes. The good, the bad, and the devotional.
Yes.
If the
situation doesn't matter for us because we're looking at the forms and we're identifying the material, then should we, to progress, should we put ourselves in the favorable situations even though that's not the highest, or should we put ourselves in...
No, you don't have to see. You don't have to worry about putting yourself in situations that aren't ideal. The material energy is going to take care of that for you anyway. So you don't have to stress, be in anxiety, stay up sleepless at night, wondering if I will be able to find unfortunate situations to be in. Does that make sense? Maya very kindly already takes care of that, so you don't have to worry.
If we have a choice, then we should go to the ones we see favorable rather than the...
No, but what will you gain from the unfavorable?
Like, other devotees want that or something. Please the other devotees or something.
So you haven't figured out where you want to do service yet? You have? Okay. Okay. So, the point is you are trying to serve Krishna. So whatever situation is best for serving Krishna, that's what you put yourself into. But what we're talking about here is that you have other powers at work that are adjusting the situations, either Mahamaya or Yogamaya, depending upon what is one's situation. Right? And so within those situations, you try to be Krishna conscious.
Okay, right.
Yeah? You know, you don't unnecessarily, it's raining and stormy and cold and wet, go stand outside just to put yourself in an unfortunate situation so you can remember the Lord.
Yeah.
You can sit inside, you know, where the room's warm with the windows closed and like that, and also appreciate the Lord's kindness. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes? Is that something? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could give an example of what is a favorable situation.
Favorable means what situation you can be Krishna conscious in. You know what I'm saying? You come up with so many favorable situations, but are you Krishna conscious in those favorable situations? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So and then at that moment, then our attitude changes and our heart like opens up for gratitude and
whatever it is. It's see, gratitude and these other things are symptoms of the devotional platform. So it's not about gratitude and kindness and all those. Those are natural symptoms. It means it says the 26 qualities of a devotee. It means the devotee already has those. They're not something that it's not specifically trying to attain those. You know, just like everyone is it now it's 8 habits, I think, of a successful person, right? They up the game. Seven didn't work and people are complaining.
Everybody's
I'm reading the book, I'm practicing it, I'm not successful. Why not? Because there's the 8. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so then okay. Now, the whole point is everyone looks at the 7 or the 8 successful habits, or the 8 habits, right? Mm-hmm. But they should be looking at successful people.
Yeah.
You understand? Because in other words, the successful person has those habits. So the devotee has those habits. So we only notice the qualities to point out that where is a weakness in our actual devotion. Does that make sense? But, you know, compassion, it's not that we're going out and just, you know, trying to do, you know, our Mother Teresa kind of scene, you know. Does that make sense? You know, then someone greets you, yes, your Mother Teresa-ness,
yes.
You know, like that. So that's not, his point is why aren't we compassionate? Because we're not seeing everyone in connection with the Lord. So that's the weak. That's the devotional weakness. Not that we try to cultivate it separately. So these 26 qualities aren't cultivated separately; they're cultivated in connection to the Lord.
They come like naturally
when the attitude is right, and then
that's
the connection. Yes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, sometimes that was the big hand was on the 9 last time I looked.
Okay,
move at different speeds.
Yeah,
sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Sangha Vaitha Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaur.